now present Music from New York.
Just one moment, please. Newsroom in New York. This has been a day of momentous news, and not the least of the spectacular reports we've broadcast here from the NBC Newsroom in New York was the eyewitness account of our Stanley Richardson, the first reporter to bring back a first-hand report from one of the naval ships which took part in the invasion. His report was first broadcast early this morning. Now, for the benefit of NBC's listeners, we bring you a transcription of this historic broadcast by Stanley Richardson.
Not a recognizable enemy plane appeared overhead. At least no bombs were dropped at or on any of the ships in our area. No low-flying fighters came over to strafe us with machine gun fire. And no enemy vessel, not even one of their vaunted E-boats, came out to the attack. The officers and men with whom I rode wondered searchingly about this. They had been keyed up with some real German opposition, both from the air and the sea. Their trigger fingers were itching for a scrap, and they were a very disappointed lot at not getting it. If the Germans weren't just too timid to come out, the only other ready explanation that could be advanced was that they were too busily engaged in coping with the Allied air attacks made on their shore establishment as a prelude to the actual landing of troops. In the area we covered, we could see hundreds of bombers and fighters shuttling back and forth, dropping their bomb loads and returning to England for more explosives to blast the enemy. We could see the big two-engined American transport planes, also in the hundreds, returning to their bases in the United Kingdom after dropping their airborne troops in France. Yes, Terry had a lot to keep him busy last night and early today. But as far as the naval phase of our activity was concerned, not a shot was exchanged with the enemy while I was on the scene. For that preliminary phase of the show, at any rate, it was all too incredibly easy. We left our patrol torpedo boat based in daylight to accompany the slow-moving, light advanced guard of ships, which had to pave the way for the actual landing. One of our missions was to protect the Allied minesweepers, which cleared a wide channel straight to the enemy shore, where our two transports and supply ships. Long lines of ships of every description were discernible on the skyline. Literally miles of craft in even columns converging upon the area in the channel marked for the concentration point for the actual invasion. Huge transports, tank landing ships, smaller troop landing craft, tankers and supply vessels of every kind plodded doggedly along under lowering skies, tinkling over heavy seas. You people at home would have been thrilled to the bone to have seen all these American men, American ships, and American supplies sailing calmly into the action for which they had been prepared and trained for so many months. It was estimated that there were more than 4,000 ships of all kinds in the channel for this combined operation. By nightfall, we were nearing the French coast, and our watch tightened. But nothing happened. Even when a full near moon, appearing fitfully from behind the clouds, gave our position away clearly to any enemy who may have been lying in wait for us. Then the fast and heavy combat ships moved up into position. All aligned themselves in the bombardment area to loose a hail of high explosives to protect the troops moving into the beaches on their landing craft. The warships started laying their smoke screens preparatory to shooting their guns. It was within only a few minutes of each hour of the long-awaited D-Day. And right there was where I got the biggest disappointment of my life. We turned around and headed back at high speed for the English coast. Our PT squadron was under orders to return to base and refuel for another mission as soon as its first operation was completed. So I didn't even hear the bombardment begin. But I can tell you that if things are going as well now as they look to be going at the time I left the scene, it won't be long before our troops have a firm foothold.
That was a direct report from London, a rebroadcast by transcription of the first eyewitness account from a reporter who covered the invasion aboard an Allied invasion. The report of NBC's Stanley Richardson, somewhere in England. And now NBC continues its special invasion coverage. And for more late news reports, here is NBC's Don Goddard.
Here's a bulletin just through. Transocean, in a Berlin broadcast, says the Allies have established a 15-mile front from a mile to a half a mile deep between Villers-sur-Mer and Trouville. This area is about 7 miles south of the big port of Le Havre, where transatlantic liners docked in pre-war days, and it takes in the beach resort area of Deauville. And here's another bulletin. The British radio, just heard by NBC, by our monitors here, says that the Allied invasion line in France was sufficiently broad by evening to be more than a bridgehead. Then we have established more than a bridgehead on the northern coast of France. And a dispatch has just come through giving the location of one of our bridgeheads, or what is more than a bridgehead along the French coast now. Reporter Desmond Tagg stood on the deck of a British destroyer off the French village of Bernier-sur-Mer. From that point, he watched the first wave of Allied troops storm on the beaches. Bernier-sur-Mer lies southeast of Le Havre. The reporter says the assault went on those smoking beaches, and cordite smoke still curled skyward from a terrific bombardment by Allied warships. Wave after wave of khaki-clad figures stormed up the beach, overcame whatever opposition they found, won the immediate beachhead in a very short period of time, that beachhead that they have now expanded and are continuing to expand against German opposition. And soon after, the beachmasters had their organizations in order. Vehicles, guns, more troops, equipment of all descriptions were sorted out. They were dispatched to their proper units. And shortly after that first wave of troops went ashore, one more division of Allied troops stormed in, bringing their equipment and battle supplies into Western Europe. And there on the beaches at Bernier-sur-Mer, the Allies have established one of their ever-widening beachheads. But I think the most encouraging note that's come from General Eisenhower's headquarters in London is that statement that Allied losses have been much lighter than expected, came in earlier this afternoon.
Fewer American, British, and Canadian lives lost. Fewer French lives lost. Fewer Belgian and Dutch lives in the initial stages of invasion than was expected. It's not told officially just where along the French coast our troops have landed, just how many beachheads we have established. But the indications are that we have at least two large ones, and one Swedish report says we have at least a dozen smaller ones. Perhaps many more points have been invaded by Allied invasion forces by this time. The landings have occurred in a 100-mile stretch of coastline between the cities of Le Havre and Cherbourg, as you know. General Eisenhower hit that portion of the French coast that is lowest and that has the widest beaches. He avoided, or he thus far has avoided, the heavily fortified cliffs opposite Dover, where the Germans have set up their heavy naval guns, and miles upon miles of fortifications and defenses in depth. There are several versions of progress made by our invasion units to this hour. The official version from London states that Allied forces have thrust several miles inland. The Germans say that Allied spearheads have pushed to a point about 15 miles from the coast now. Later, they said the front had been widened. It is evident now that the great military thrust of Western Europe caught the Germans by surprise. That's been agreed upon now thoroughly. Only a day or so ago, radios in Berlin were saying the hour for invasion had come and had gone, that there would be no invasion in the near future. And I'm afraid that a great many people in this country thought the same thing. The reports coming back from London say that only very light enemy opposition, much lighter than expected, has been met so far. Great fleets of the RAF and American planes laid a carpet of bombs over the invasion area. From midnight to 8 o'clock this morning, 7,500 sorties were flown from England. 7,500 sorties from 8 o'clock to now. And the invasion fleet of 4,000 vehicles, several thousand auxiliary craft, took part in landing the troops. 4,000 vessels, naval units, including heavy battleships, sailed in to within a mile of the shore, and they pounded away at German coastal positions so effectively that those guns, when they opened up in reply, showed that many of them had been hit. But London says our losses in invasion craft is very light. Either the German aim was poor or their guns were knocked out before the main force of invasion craft came within firing range. And Berlin does admit that many thousands of paratroops and airborne soldiers spearheaded the great thrust in the hours of darkness last night, and they came on. The big Dakota transport planes flew over the channel with navigation lights showing so that they could keep formation. The airborne troops were dropped behind the German coastal defenses. There was very little loss among planes and personnel in the air prior to that landing. And the initial reports coming back from those isolated paratroopers say that they're holding their own. A German report says that Nazi tanks have been thrown into the fray to meet American tanks and British tanks. As yet, the vaunted Luftwaffe has not put in an appearance. Only about 50 German planes had been sighted over the entire invasion area up until 8 o'clock this morning. 50 German planes against a total of some 7,500 Allied warplanes and more, 11,000 altogether flying there in the skies above that beachhead. But Allied airmen have warned that a violent reaction by American air forces is expected very soon. Reich Marshal Hermann Göring has issued an order of the day stating the invasion must be beaten off if the Luftwaffe has to perish. The grand assault was scheduled for yesterday, postponed for 24 hours because of bad weather. It was still heavy weather in the channel early this morning. Perhaps anxious moments in Allied headquarters until those small craft had made the coast of France and disgorged their invasion cargo. Perhaps some of our soldiers became seasick in the crossing. Who knows? But the result of the fighting thus far do not show it. Prime Minister Churchill announced the invasion in the House of Commons 6 hours after the first seaborne troops had landed. He said the landings were the first of a series. He disclosed that 11,000 Allied planes were available for the fight. The Germans are said to have about one-fifth that number with which to combat the great offensive. Later on, Churchill made another speech to the House of Commons, reporting that things had gone better than our fondest hopes. And this is from your NBC newsroom in New York. This is Don Goddard speaking.
NBC has cleared its schedule of all regular programs so that all day and all night you'll be able to hear the latest news of the invasion as it happens. This is the National Broadcasting Company.